The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome along to the GAA Hour on a Thursday. It's me, Conan, and Connor in the studio here as usual. And there's only one place to start, lads, and that's the Peter Leahy interview from yesterday. So I thought he came across really well. I thought he explained his situation really well. I think when you have Peter Leahy's account yesterday, you have the player's statement, you have the Mayo County Board unanimously voting to throw Carnacon out, whether you agree with that decision or not. They obviously have that information that everybody has, and they're deciding to take that extreme measure by throwing Carnacon out. There's three different people all in agreement. The other side of this argument won't say what the problem is. So, like, yeah, do you know what I mean, lads? It just completely throws this wide open.
Yeah, I thought that coming in, because I was thinking, oh, we need to have a bit of balance here, and this is only one side of the story. Yeah. But
now I've texted Cora to come on the show, so I'm waiting to hear back from her, and she's welcome on the show anytime if she's anything to add to that. But I'm not sure she will add to that, because if Peter's account is right, geez, it'd be very embarrassing for Cora to admit that that's the reason all this mess has come about.
Yeah, so it's not the only side of the story that we've heard. Like, it's not only that, it's the only one that's been corroborated as well. Like, you know, this has been backed up.
That's the thing.
I thought he was brilliant yesterday, and you know, I don't want to praise you too much on Twitter, because you were getting a lot of that, but and he seemed to do everything really well and by the book, and he went through the official channels. He contacted the liaison officer, which he said the players didn't do. He went to the county board, which he said the players didn't do. So he seems to have done everything very well and very cleanly. Yeah. So I thought he came out of it very well.
It's everyone's side of the story apart from Carnacon's. So it's the first time that, like, I think there's been a bit of clarity in this whole process at all, like, you know, going back since July.
There was a lot of rumours, but now that's been cleared up from his side.
From his side particularly, yeah. But like,
and it has to be said, the player statement side as well. So the remaining player side, they've had their say.
Yeah,
too.
The county board have had their say twice when they responded to Carnacon's original appeal. So it all comes back to what we wanted in the first place was for those player welfare issues that were supposedly an issue to be highlighted, and that falls on Carnacon now. So interesting to see. It's incumbent on them to, you know, respond to this to Peter Leahy's account of events, because, like, he talked to you for nearly an hour yesterday. I don't think he could be more clear from his side. So the onus is on them to come up and say what happened from their point of view.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And a couple of things out of it, like, I mean, he would never have come on the show if Cora hadn't said unsafe environment and stuff like that. And that was on in an interview she did with Off the Ball. And I listened to that interview and I was pulling my hair out, because this interview was the morning that the player statements, her own teammates, had completely discredited her story. And she was given such an easy ride on it. Only Eoghan Sheehan kind of pulled her up on something and asked an uncomfortable question. And I was like, Jesus, that was the game changer for me. When I was kind of up in the air about what's going on here, and it was all very secretive. Nobody's really giving you information, and you're ringing people and they're like, well, we're not sure, we think this, and you can't go on that. But the minute I saw that player statement, that was the game changer for me. That was it. They knew the situation, which Cora said in Off the Ball, they weren't aware of it. They were all in the mediation process. They were fully aware of what these issues were, right? Because they were all in different rooms and it was all trashed out. So she denied that this. Cora on that Off the Ball interview even denied that the players wrote that statement, and this was just left go. Like, I mean, and she's going on continuing on this. So I thought it was a very, very one-sided argument. And I'm delighted that Peter got to say his side of it yesterday. And I've been on a mission all morning trying to make sure that everybody reports on this, because there's obviously this inter-media company rivalries where they might not take up something that's on another one and all that game. But I think this is more important than that, because, like Peter said yesterday, it's almost bordering on slander, some of the things that have been said. And I think this transcends any rivalry, and his side of it should be put out there. If you put out Cora's comments, the unsafe, unhealthy environment, personal and all that kind of thing, well, you have a duty to put out the put out the other side of the story.
And especially for a story like this, which we know so little about, and like this is 49 minutes of first hand experience of a guy who's there telling you everything you want to know. And yeah, like, it's important, as he mentioned the word slanderous, so it's important to report it from that point of view, but this is more information than we've ever gotten from the story. Like, the problem with the story is that we didn't know anything, so now here's 49 minutes. Go nuts.
And if players' feelings are getting hurt, and that's a reason, like, I mean, if you're not making the team, yeah, you're pissed off. Like, if you want to say that hurts you, that's bring it into another kind of category altogether. You could argue that you're hurt, but just because you're hurt because you don't make the team is no reason that that the manager's done anything wrong. That's his job, is to pick the team, and if he wants to play you as an impact sub, yeah, you're pissed off. It's been done on me. I've dropped off panels. Whenever I dropped off a panel, I was half embarrassed about what I was doing. I knew what I was doing was wrong, it was childish, it was petty, but I just needed to do it. Needed to do it for my own happiness. But that's not, no, that's my issues. They're my problems. They're not anybody else's.
Yeah, and when it was put out there, it was put out there by, you know, when Cora mentioned the word unsafe and unhealthy, you're asking questions about the environment, but about the nature in which these issues might have been put across. So was this Peter Lee having a word with somebody one-on-one and nobody else heard that, which you might have interpreted because Cora said she didn't want to make these feelings public, they're sensitive to individuals. But then when Peter goes through the process of what actually happened, it was so kind of professional. There was a selector, there was himself, there was a player liaison officer, just so the player wouldn't feel isolated. So, you know, like that
he knew it was getting messy at that stage.
Yeah, from his point of view.
And by the way, like, you know, clubs in all counties often fall out with managers, and they all leave. You know, they have a mass cull because the clubs don't get behind a certain manager. That does happen, as you said as well. Like, and it doesn't mean that you have to drag this whole thing through the national press and start saying that it's player welfare issue. You just leave the panel.
Yeah,
just leave. Like,
and even if you say I'm leaving for personal reasons, this would have been forgotten about. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But the way it was, and double down on it, wasn't just I made that mistake, I'll clear that up. It was double down on that off the ball interview that I heard, and again was just let go, which I found really. But another thing, just to clear up, and I thought this was very interesting, and it was a big thing for me, was the Connacht final freeze issue, where there's a video of Sarah Rowe and Grace Kelly both at different stages coming over to claim the freeze that they thought they were on. Peter Leahy is sure that everybody knew, but Cora said after the game that it wasn't made clear enough to her that it wasn't her. But like, they played 4 challenge games before this Connacht final. Like, how can it not be clear
with
how
that system in place,
with the two girls take it? So the agreement was that if it was a 21 metre free or 14, wherever you're allowed to take from, Cora could take them because she can blast them to the net. So this is a kind of a, you know, like almost like hurling, like we saw Michael Meehan doing it in football, where you score a goal, very rarely happen, but she has the ability to do that. She's on them. Grace and Sarah Rowe are on the from the right and the left, and anything from around the 45, Cora's on that because she's got a good long range kick. So like, this was very clear, and this was what was happening in challenge matches. Oops. So like, I mean, how can you go to a kind of final and actually tell your teammate to go with, like that's beyond belief for me. For me, if I was Peter Leahy, and I feel terrible for criticising Peter Leahy early in the year because you don't know anything of this is going on, you're just trying to call it as you see it, you can't ring everyone out of the top of the show story talking points to find out the background. But if I was Peter Leahy after that kind of final, she'd be gone. I wouldn't have that.
But did he not take it on himself? Did he not say that?
I think he was being a bit too kind on that now.
Okay. Well, the video would suggest that, because the videos that you can see, well, Sarah and Grace Kelly definitely seem to think that they were on the freeze that day, because they walked over. You know, it takes, if you watch it, it's an uncomfortable 20 seconds or so to see them walking over, having a conversation with Cora, and then walking away looking a little bit pissed off. So there's mixed communication there somewhere. Peter Leahy did take it upon himself, but it looks as if it was only Cora that didn't really get the message that she wasn't supposed to be on the
freeze. Yeah, he sort of just said, like, you know, maybe I didn't communicate that clearly, but he said from his end that
he said everyone else, he said he was clear on it, and everybody else was clear on it.
He was being just very nice.
He was being too nice. For me, he was being too nice. But anyways, listen, if you haven't heard that interview, it's on SoundCloud or any of your podcast apps, and it was up there since yesterday. So we'll move on from that, lads, because Kieran Donaghy, maybe we're a bit late in the game, we missed this retirement, but listen, we had the last interview he's ever done anyways. We're very suspicious about whether he was staying on. I said I retired him at the end of the show. But like, I mean, you see all the tributes, and you love these tributes, and you can tell a lot shocked by these tributes, how the kind of the standing that players had. Like, so there's a common theme throughout all the tributes. So Mark O'Shea says, best teammate I ever had, bar none, the ultimate team player. Paul Geaney, what a man, what a player, what a teammate. Darren O'Sullivan, lucky enough to play with some legends, he's one of them, but he's on his own as the best teammate you could ever have. Eamon Fitzmaurice, he has the personality to go into management, he's the ultimate team player. Like, here we go. Like, I mean, it's just the ultimate teammate and the ultimate team player. Like, you know, like, I mean, one thing always sticks out for me. I was doing sideline reporting in my previous job and I was down at the Munster final. It was Kerry and Cork were favourites. It was in 14. Kerry really kicked on after that. They hammered Cork, but Donaghy was out in the warm up and he hadn't got a start. And the encouragement he was giving every single player, all these young lads, and he encouraging them and having little pep talks with them. I remember seeing it. Jesus, fair play to that man, because, like, I mean, he's obviously would be annoyed that he's not starting, and he's the ultimate teammate that he's not in. I remember asking him about this, and he said, well, it's kind of maybe my basketball background in that it's not all about the first five, it's about, you know, we're in and out, and I don't really take it personally, and I just try to help everyone. And maybe that basketball background and that culture, and that's the culture in GAA now going to be, because now it's a 20 man game and loads more lads have the chance of playing. Whereas in my day, it was all about that 15, and that 15 was the holy grail. And if you were outside that 15, your whole world is your whole world is over.
You left the panel.
But that just really nice tributes. Then you have Paul Flynn, obviously a rival of his. All the best, great to battle against you over the years, massive respect. You've Bomber Liston saying, with the skills he had, his fielding and quick hands, I take it as a compliment to be compared to him, which is a lovely thing for the Bomber Liston to have said to him. And then you know a big name GA player has retired when Rog weighs in with a tribute. Like, Rog only holds Rog holds his tributes for the Henry Shefflins, the Colm Coopers, and Kieran Donaghy got into that mix. So well done at Starry Boy, enjoy the afterlife, and after everything you've given, legend, fair play. So there you are. You've got the Rog tribute. you know you've made it.
My favourite Kieran Donaghy story. Remember, we had him on 2 years ago, and I think he was releasing his book around then, and he was talking about how I love a rags to riches story. He got brought off in a junior C game before, and nothing looking at him, but under 16 game, he came back. They played awful. He's back in his mate's house playing pro Evo or whatever, and the dad came in and said, "Jesus Christ, who was that useless midfielder you had playing?" And Donaghy put the head up and said, "Sorry, Mr. Rince, that was me." Your man said, "Well, you did your best," and walked out. But now look at him, like, that's what the GA is all about.
Look at me now, Mr. Lynch. I got a tribute from Rog.
He was on Underdogs there. Wasn't it the first series of Underdogs? Because Underdogs was back last week. Hard to believe. I think he was in the first one. Himself and Pierce O'Neill were midfield. What a midfield.
Yeah, that's where he made his break back.
I just remember you're on about 2014. That was the year that he came on against Mayo and made the difference. And, like, it was, it says a lot about him as a character that year, because that year he was frozen out nearly. I mean, he didn't come on against Galway in the quarter final. He was considering retiring, I think. Eamon Fitzmaurice ran five subs and Donaghy wasn't one of them. Yeah. He's thinking, is this me done? And then in the first semi final, completely changes the game.
It was the last throw of the dice. He was literally thrown in that day because the game was gone.
And then in the replay in Limerick, he completely changed the game as well, scores a goal. But I remember being I was behind the goal that he would have scored his goal into in Limerick. And, like, Donaghy, like, throughout his career was kind of the guy that, even though he's a great character, the guy that opposition fans still love to hate. Yeah. Now, he kind of played up to that a bit, but what I distinctly remember is he was getting such abuse from the Mayo fans, but, like, really vocal, like, really kind of ostentatiously encouraging his teammates as well. Like, his massive hands, you can see it, he's doing this big clap hand gesture and giving it to the Mayo lads while he was at it. Like, and I was thinking, while I hate you right now, I would absolutely love if you were on my team. Like, I just think that's the biggest compliment you can have for an opposition player.
I do. I think a lot of opposition fans, I do take your point, they hated him and he didn't care about that, but I think they grudgingly love him because he's a great personality.
Yeah, hated him for those 70 minutes, I think, and then afterwards they probably tell you, oh yeah, but why?
Yeah, right. Anyways, two-tier championship, lads, it's back on the agenda. So Central Council have given their approval to the establishment of a second-tier football championship. It's a meeting last Saturday. There was huge approval for the competition, which it would run concurrently with the main championship, finishing on the same day as the All-Ireland and replacing the traditional minor final as the curtain raiser senior. Throw in an All-Star trip and throw in tier two All-Stars there, and you'll be more than happy with that. So this is a thing John Horan has been strong on. He wants the second tier. I'm really happy about this. I don't want the second tier just willy-nilly thrown in. This has to be part of a radical overhaul of the championship, because, let's be honest, it is a radical overhaul. Couple of points I have on this, and this is absolutely vital. It's now another thing. This failed massively the last time it was at Congress, but you have Mickey Quinn from Longford, you have Tomás Corrigan coming on our show, you have lots of players now saying it probably is better off with a second tier, with promotion and relegation, and you've always a chance to get up into the big tier. Here's my here's my thing with it, and I've said this a lot of times. Call it All Ireland 1 and All Ireland 2. Has to be an All Ireland. We're not going to call it a Tommy Murphy. We're not going to call it B Championship. We're not going to call it anything like it's an All Ireland. It has to be called an All Ireland. This is this is not even up for debate for me. It has to be an All Ireland, or else what are you wasting your time for? It's an All Ireland. All Ireland 1, All Ireland 2. Bang. Any complaints?
Call
it
intermediate.
Call it intermediate All Ireland, maybe. Yeah,
but it's the same in every competition in the GAA, apart from
has to be an All Ireland. I still think intermediate might. I still think there's a kind of a prestige.
But it
issue.
Is like an All Ireland too. The same like to
well,
me. Anyways.
Okay, everyone knows what it is. Like, yeah, there's no point in pretending.
Yeah, but still, if an All Ireland 2 won an All Ireland 2, I just think psychologically players would be more inclined. Anyways, this is a big thing for me. You can't start in the first All-Ireland and be knocked into the second All-Ireland. I think it will never work, and that's been tried. Because if you, as it stands now with the qualifiers, you get knocked out of the Leinster Championship, you have an 8-week maybe gap. Well, it's shortened now a little bit. You have a gap between your championship. And I've been in that gap. I've been with Laois, and it's so hard to keep lads together. You're out of the championship, right? Now, you have a way back into that senior championship, and it's really difficult to keep lads together. You're out of that Leinster, now you're back into the main competition, All Ireland. Imagine how difficult it will be to be knocked out of this main championship, and now you're into the intermediate, All Ireland too. Sure, lads won't hang around. Like, I mean, they'll be gone to America. Like, I know, Conan, you won't agree with this, so we'll get your thoughts on this. Because
well, they can't go to America if they play the championship as one.
Oh, well, that's there already, yeah. But it will be very difficult to keep them around. Yeah. There's a real psychological thing about, right, we're knocked out of the A and now we're into this shit.
Yeah.
I think the second tier competition has to be what you're training for all year.
Yeah,
and it has to be given that respect that this is yours. Now, if you win it and you get to the final, the two finalists should get up to the senior the next year. So there's obviously that carrot. If you're good enough, you'll be back up. And the bottom two in the tier one will go back into tier two. And you've that way in. So if you're a Carlow and you make huge improvements, if you're a Laois this year who's made huge improvements, then you can see a way back into that tier. I really think that if it's not the competition you're training for all year, there's a stigma there of, right, well, now we're into the B shit. Well, I'm not. Yeah. Look, I'll just go back and play with my club.
It's nearly disrespectful to the people that are in that second championship either. It's like, oh, here come the rejects from the top division.
Yeah, no, well, you see, that would probably be the case that everybody would start in the A and then the others, you know.
Okay, fair enough.
Like, but like, that gap that you're talking about, though, that is because of the provincial championship. And I, as bored as we all are talking about championship restructures and stuff, like, I just don't want to entertain any talk about it anymore unless they're talking about just getting rid of the provinces, because that's the problem. That's the problem with the length of the championship and that delay you're talking about.
Yeah.
And it's the biggest inequality in the whole championship as well. Like,
surely this necessitate the removal of the provincial championship.
But I don't think they will do that.
When this is coming from an Ulster man, there's a problem with the provincial championship.
Exactly. Like, you know, and I don't mind having it as a cup or whatever, but like, I think they will have these still things connected. I do think they should just have a round robin 32, and if you don't get through the group of four and you go into the B championship, whatever, but you have to get rid of the provincial to do that. But I think they will keep the provincial. Remember Pádraig Duffy was on, Jarriff Byrne said it before, they said, listen, they're not going to get rid of the provincial championships at Congress.
Yeah.
I think they'll keep it, and because their B championship will just be here you go now that's the thing.
That's why you have to play the game with them here, and you have to say, look, we'll keep your sacred cow of provincial championships, but it has to be separated from the All-Ireland series. So let's play ball, let's find a compromise. Nobody's saying you have to lose and your provincial councils has to lose what they love and all that structure that are there. But what the argument should always be is that they can't be part of the All-Ireland series. Mm. So they're important standalone competitions. Play them before the All-Ireland series.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's the solution here. Keep your provincials, and if you want the provincial winners to have some leg up then in the championship or be seeded or whatever structure is, you know, to make them still be valuable and prestigious, they should be anyways if they're as important as they all think they are. This is the compromise. So it's not get rid of them, because if you say get rid of them, you're going to completely scare them altogether. So say, look, we love them. And we think Congress is really important.
We just want to play them in January, that's all.
We just want to play them before before the All-Ireland Series, because they don't mix into the All-Ireland Series, because the All-Ireland Series should be about equality across the board, same amount of games, same starting point, all those things that we've talked about so often. So unless they're... I'm really excited about this tier two, but I can see myself being really disappointed with what kind of comes out.
I'm not getting excited yet, because it's always that you have to pander to Congress. You have to pander to Congress. You have to make incremental improvements, because if you try and make dramatic sweeping changes, they're not going to pass through Congress, even if those dramatic sweeping changes are the best solution. And like when you say, like, there's you know, loads of approval for this idea, but like 2 years ago, wasn't it? It nearly didn't go to Congress because there wasn't enough support.
Oh, they had to pull it because there was no support.
So, like, I know you mentioned like Mickey Quinn, Tomás Corrigan, and loads of players are coming out in support. Loads of players are coming out. I wonder, while they should be considered, how considered are the players' voices going to be in this? Or is it really going to make a difference?
Yeah.
And is, by the time it comes around to Congress next year, is it the thing that it's going to have enough support? I get excited about this sort of thing too, and then I'm like, will it pass through Congress? Maybe not. And then you're just like, no, back to
that's the thing. That's why I think we need to see player power for these kind of things. We need to see the CPA, GPA, the universities all kind of flex their muscles and say, well, you know, I'm not throwing universities in with the two unions, but they need to say, take a stand and say, listen, we're not going any further without this getting sorted out. I think we're getting closer. We're getting closer. And the fact that now, having said this, this isn't a huge kind of advancement from Croke Park, because the second tier has been tried before, the Tommy Murphy that went nowhere. So surely they'll have learned from those lessons. Surely they need to listen and realise what's wanted and what's not. But anyways, lads, because second, whenever you get into these conversations, you get lost in them, don't you, about how many things they need improvement. Another story we wanted to talk about here was, this is coming from the Roscommon County Board, and I think it's kind of has kind of led on from Kevin McStay's statement and some of the things he was talking about. So it's a proposal, and it's a proposal for Croke Park to pay travelling expenses and catering costs for all counties. So, like, I mean, when you think about it, like, it does make sense. Now, this is a big outlay for Croke Park, so they're going to push back on it. And Tom Ryan has been talking about it, saying on the training side of things, it's a little more difficult because you have different counties taking different approaches to things in terms of the number of sessions being conducted. I do accept that there's a point in there trying to assist those at one end of the resources spectrum to a greater extent than those at the other end. So, like, I mean, he's kind of saying, I don't accept his reasoning, because different counties will have different approaches, but if you have a thing like catering and travel expenses for all Tuesday and Thursday outfield sessions will be covered by the GAA. If another county wants to do more than that, that's on them. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So you can have it standardised across the whole thing. So most counties will do an outfield session on a Tuesday and a Thursday, maybe a Saturday. The players will be going home for the weekend, leave off the Saturday. But Tuesday, Thursday, catering and expenses, take that off all counties. Like, there's a lot of counties struggling. Do you know what I mean? And when you drill down into the numbers, so here's what Kevin McStay was talking about, the expenses that Roscommon County Board were incurring based on travel and catering. So he says we had at three 8-man taxis and never less than two coming from Dublin, as well as a single taxi coming from Templemore or Limerick. So, like, I mean, this is what they had. So roughly that's 300 per vehicle. So you're talking the guts of 1,000 per night or 4,000 per week. And we're at about 30 weeks in total. So we're at about 100,000 talking on travel costs, because they were using taxis to bring these lads from Dublin and from Templemore. Now, four times a week, like, I suppose the players probably don't have to train themselves don't have to pay themselves, they get travelling expenses and that's it. Then there's the catering side. For players travelling from Dublin, you're talking about an 8-hour commitment that they have to get a proper meal after training, which is absolutely not even up for debate that the players would be fed after training. By the time you fed everyone, the bill was about 500 per night or 2 grand a week. Overall, it adds up to 150,000 from a total spend on the football team of 650,000. So you have 150,000 on travel and on catering. Huge outlay. I do see a huge argument in Croke Park covering it, because how can Leitrim, and it's always these teams out the west that are getting screwed over on this, because most fellas have jobs in Dublin. Dublin have the least mileage expense. Now, it has to be said, their players still have shitty commutes, which have to go from the south side to the north side across the city. So, like, I mean, and the M50 is a disaster. So the stress and all that kind of thing. Now, Dublin players will whiz home after training when it's quieter, whereas, like, I mean, there could be a 3-hour drive for someone. But the costs of it, Like, I mean, I would be 100% behind the Roscommon County Board if they're saying that Croke Park should cover this.
Yeah, the standardised thing is a good option. Like, even a grant, like, you know, just here's whatever amount for a year. You know, yeah. And spend it whatever way you want to with the food. Like, you know, you don't go all out for a 5-star dinner after training or whatever. But yeah, like, but I think it sort of it comes back into the commercial thing as well. Whereas if the GAA were able to take this stuff on board, it makes it more equal because there's so much money being spent. Dublin can get catering partners in, they can get drinks partners in. All this stuff is covered anyway. Whereas we keep saying Leitrim, but Leitrim can't do that.
So poor Leitrim's always used as the example.
That's not fair on them. So the GAA should be intervening and saying, right, hang on, here's one county who can have all this stuff looked after, no problem whatsoever. And it's only because of where they are. They're Dublin, of course. A company wants to be associated with them. So the GAA need to intervene there and say, this isn't fair. We'll take that money. Great. They can still be attached to Dublin and we'll spread this money out to all of them.
That's an option. That's definitely an option. There's absolutely an option, and we talked about it before, of having a national sponsorship manager, and he's in control of all the sponsorship, and it's all pooled and shared equally. I'd have no problem with that either. Like, I mean, that all people want really is fairness, because, like, I mean, if one county's struggling badly financially and another has loads of money, well, how can that county? They're all in the same competition. Now, if they're in a tier two, it might take some of that pressure off, and maybe that's why Croke Park are going, listen, get these dirts down here so we don't have to be listening to this. They're all in the same competition. One can't afford any expertise, and these aren't professional teams. Like, I mean, this is the GAA who are supposed to be the governing body and make sure things are, like, to give grants, to give games development, and we've talked enough about that. That was unfairly distributed. So it's not like a case of, well, they have to fend for themselves. No, make the playing field a little bit fairer for the team. So be interesting to see how that works out. But I suppose Tom Ryan's saying on the training side of things, it's a little bit more difficult. You may have different counties taking a different approach to things in terms of the number of sessions being conducted. I don't think that's an easy way out of that. There's a very easy solution to that, just like
we
said. Like,
you're right in terms of make it the Tuesday and Thursday. Make it, like, give them, say it's for Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. If you want to do it after that, you know, it's up to you.
Anything else is your own expense.
And in terms of, like, the funding that, like, I'd say a lot of the funding that the GAA are giving to counties, from the sounds of the Roscommon figures, it sounds like a lot of that is going to that anyway. So maybe that's how they could cover the cost. It's a chunk of the funding or something. I was even thinking, I don't know what it worked, but when you're on about, like, the Dublin having an official kind of transport partner, that somebody could have come on board as the national transport partner of the GAA, but then you're costing, you know, local companies who might be involved in transporting various county teams hither and thither. But what it would do is, like, it would lessen the argument that's against Dublin at the moment, because they wouldn't be getting the same chunk because they don't have the same travel expenses. So I don't know. Like, I think it's an option. Whether it's going to, whether it'll end up materialising, I'm not entirely sure. But
so we'll have GAA buses taken over from the bus air and ones going around the.
Well, Roscommon had one for a while, so you could get whoever was involved in that and just make it to roll it out nationally.
Yeah, so we could actually, so there'd be only there might be only 10 lads on this bus, so you could actually pick up strangers on the way and charge them. You could charge them 20. These things will pay for themselves. Just start doing national bus routes, GAA in the GAA buses. Right, another one here, lads, before we get into some of this All-Star stuff. Donegal referee, I don't know where you're reading about this, it's in the Donegal Democrat. So I was actually reading recently, in a hurling match in Kerry, there was a Kerry referee given a guard escort out of the ground. But this Donegal referee was locked in his dressing room for some time after being surrounded by an angry group of supporters following an underage final in the county on Friday evening. So this lad's locked in his dressing room, surrounded by strangers, abused, had to be locked in for his own safety. The door was kicked. An under 14 match, lads.
Yeah.
Holy shit, like, I mean, this always scares me. I've actually seen two grown up men fighting at an under 14 match, fighting over one was an umpire and another one came down and challenged him, and they actually went at it, and actually on the field looking at these two men, like, thinking,
while the game was going on.
Game was going on. We were playing Stradbally under 14. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've seen this happen. But, like, I mean, I don't know how people lose their minds so much at under 40. Whatever happened to participation?
I've seen crowd violence at a under 16 game, and, like, a woman getting hit.
I shouldn't be laughing. Like, that's terrible. Like, I mean,
it's horrible.
Now, I laughed before you said the woman being hit, right?
But, like, you know, but, like, listen, some of them were given as good as they got as well. Like, and, like, you're sort of sitting back. I was in the crowd watching this, and, like, how have we gotten to this point? Like, it starts with two 15-year-olds arguing on the pitch.
Yeah.
And everybody starts feeling like they have to get involved, and all of a sudden it's one.
It's a culture thing, lads, and I mean we need to change that, because referees can't feel unsafe. Like, and thank God I played with Portlaoise, and there was just, I don't want to talk up my own club, there was never problems with us with stuff like that. There just wasn't. Yeah. And again, there is an example of Portlaoise lads coming in on the field down in Limerick in an All-Ireland semi-final against Ilmurry Kilbrickan going after the referees. Jeez, I'm just after completely contradicting myself. So maybe there was one issue, right? Yeah. There was no, I wasn't around at that time.
But you know what the problem, like, I remember from coaching underage, like, one of the things I learned quickly was that some of the other managers were very wily. Like, they would get on the referees' back straight away, and it worked. Like, you know, so suddenly a few weeks later you're doing the same thing and you're trying to get the referee sort of a bit more intimidated and wanting to give you a few more choices, and this spreads then, like, you know, because the more pressure you put on a referee, especially a relatively inexperienced one, he's going to just try and have an easier night, like, and like, that's a big problem. That's a real, like you say, culture that, I don't know how you started addressing that.
That was one of three incidents in Donegal, just Donegal alone, at, like, over the last week. I read that report that you were on about, and then at the end of it was like, oh, and there was a ref, he's actually used to play for Mayo, Eugene McHale, played for Mayo for years, scored an All-Ireland final, scored a goal in All-Ireland semi-final against Kerry, and he was, I don't know, was he locked in the dressing room, but his door was kicked, the referee door was kicked afterwards.
I was reading that.
And then Guidor and Unans were playing at the weekend, and there was a big row between the players before the game even started in the warm up and in the tunnel as well. That's just Donegal in the last week.
And Donegal wouldn't have a really bad reputation. I think Tyrone club football has a bad reputation. Donegal, you think, isn't as bad, but, like, I mean, this three serious incidents.
It's not to highlight Donegal, it's to highlight that this happens all the time, regularly. We all probably have stories from our own career, underage and senior, and I think sometimes people in the GAA like to think that we're whiter than white, and we're absolutely not.
No, absolutely not. And it is a culture, and it's a culture to be at referees as well, and that's not good enough. And there's no referee should be feeling feckin' unsafe or getting any kind of escorts out of it. Like, I mean, cop the hell on. It's an under 14 match. But anyways, right, we'll talk about these. Oh, we talk quickly about Mick Bohan here. I had this down here before we get into the All-Stars. As I always say, we're going way over time here, but we'll keep going. So Mick Bohan, right, he's the anti Jim Gavin. So Jim Gavin respects everyone, even Carlo Leitrim, very good team, expecting a very good game, very tough game out of them. So Mick Bohan,
Connor's sketches there, was it?
So Mick Bohan is coming up to the biggest game of the year against Cork. Now you have to remember, this is a Cork team that beat them in three or four finals by a point. Could never beat Cork, Dublin couldn't. Ended up beating Mayo last year because Mayo did them a favour by beating Cork. So now they play Cork. Now Dublin have come on leaps and bounds, and they're a really bloody brilliant team in the ladies as well as the men's. But he's coming out the week before the All-Ireland final, and he's saying that they played an A versus B game last weekend, and he says it was a very competitive game, probably the most competitive game we've had all year. Like, I could almost imagine Jim Gavin releasing a statement. I'd like to distance myself from Mick Bowen's comment there.
At least he's only disrespecting the teams that Dublin haven't played, never mind Cork. You know, he hasn't played Cork yet, so they can't say that.
Well, they would have played Cork in the league now.
In the championship, maybe.
And Galway beat them in the league. And you know, or some, I think it was Galway beat them in the league, and then Dublin beat them by a point in the semi-final. So
it must have been tough games.
Yeah, it must have been a bloody good game. Maybe the B team won, because I don't know, that just sounds a little bit OTT for me. Almost disrespectful. Now maybe he was saying it, well, he was saying it in the context of trying to big up his squad. But at the same time, like, I mean, you can't say stuff like that, because it's not true. It's not, they're not, like, I mean, anyways, listen, we'll move on from that, because the GAA All-Star nominations are out, right? So we'll quickly go through this. We're not going to go through much. So the big talking point in the hurling, lads, this isn't your area of expertise. You're all over the
You're raging this morning.
Unbelievable.
So Jack Brown, interestingly enough, wasn't. Now, Brendan Bugler's tweeted about this. Jack not getting nominated is a disgrace. Go back over to his season. Look at the players he marked and what they got. Don't give them a he didn't give them a sniff and set up many attacks. Really can't understand this. Jackie Terrell said, no Jack Brown, hard to understand that one, was outstanding all year. Interestingly, when Cheddar and Michael picked their All-Star team here on the GAR about 3 weeks ago, Jack Brown was close to getting an All-Star. Now he's not even gotten nominated. So, like, I mean, that's a real strange one. You know, like, I mean, we can't, it's colleagues in the GAA world of ours that pick these things. So I don't want to be overly critical of them. But at the same time, that's definitely a weird one.
Yeah, and I know more about hurling than most people. But, like,
you did present one show.
Yeah, two, actually. Two. 1 week of hell. No, but Jack Brown doing the, like, playing for Clare, but honestly, tight cornerback, picked up a lot of the jobs. But some of the scores, he would, like, as a untrained eye coming to watch him, some of the long range scores, particularly against Tipperary, like, you're watching this going, right, this boy's definitely going to get an All Star from my point of view, never mind not being nominated for one.
It's the nomination is the strange one. No one would probably, like, I mean, the two Limerick cornerbacks are probably the two front runners for All Stars, but, like, I mean,
out of 45 players are named and he's at one of them. That's
You think that's a little bit too much. So player of the year in the hurling has thrown up a surprise as well. So Joe Canning, Pádraic Mannion are not surprises. Keane Lynch has got there instead of Graham Mulcahy. So that will have surprised a lot. Keane Lynch, obviously very good and consistent all year, wasn't on too many people's lips for player of the year. Graham Mulcahy probably shone a little bit brighter for the whole year, even though Keane Lynch is so important to them. Another interesting one there, young player of the year, Dara Fitzgibbon, Kyle Hayes, Mark Coleman. That's a direct head to head between Dara Fitzgibbon and Kyle Hayes. For me, it's a toss up. Fitzgibbon might shade it, or Kyle Hayes in the final.
Oh, man, like, I mean, final.
That kind of drag you maybe a little bit over the line. Football All-Star nominations, we've no surprises about. Big shout out to Graham Brodie, who's a banker to get goalkeeper.
Conor Callaghan was a bit of a surprise, was it?
Con didn't go in. Con did get in. Well, Con had a good semi and final. See, did a great final. He had a very good semi. Yeah,
he's probably all right.
Like, yeah, struggling badly all year. You're right. Con probably count himself very lucky to have been
struggling
nominated.
Badly when they were winning comfortably, and then came to the fore in the games that really mattered.
Well,
I mean,
that's true.
Levels of everybody else.
They beat Galway pretty comfortably, and that was his best game. We'll give him the nomination. It's not something that would keep me awake at night. No. Like the Jack Brown one there.
Iconic.
Right, so footballer of the year there, lads. So just on this, so Brian Fenton, Kieran Kilkenny, Jack McCaffrey. No complaints there. They're the obvious three footballer of the year. What I have issues with is how Kieran Kilkenny in the bookies, in Paddy Power and everywhere else, Kieran Kilkenny is 1-7 favourites. So Jack McCaffrey's 5-1 and Brian Fenton is 10-1. Now, I think it's a lot closer than that, right? So Kilkenny's obviously had a brilliant year. A lot of people are commenting on his scoring tally. So he scored 224 from play. Now, 215 of that came against Wicklow, Longford and Laois. So I'm discounting that. I don't care. And I'll do the same with David Clifford with his Cork demolition and Clare demolition. I'm not counting it. If you wanted to put me in corner forward on either of those two teams in those either two games, I could easily get on the end of a move and hand pass it over the bar. Suddenly you have 3 points. Shiz, Woolley's on the way for an All-Star here. That's not the way it works. In hammerings, it just does not work like that, as far as I'm concerned. So he scored 9 points in the next 4 games. So averaging about 2, got 4 in the final. Outstanding in the final. I don't like people continuously saying, well, he got 224. He's brought score into his game. I don't know, like, maybe he has brought score into his game, but he got 1-7 against Wicklow. It was a 30 point hammering, you know, like, I mean, would you really count? I'd say Kieran Kilkenny's barely counting that. Now, I do think he's slight favourite to win it ahead of the two lads, but I don't think he's the 1-7 favourite to win it.
I'd have less of a problem with the scoring stats being used in his favour if he wasn't brilliant throughout the year as well.
Yeah.
Like, he was really influential and really good in every game. If, like, a couple of years ago, what I didn't like, you would have said yourself that he was held up for that because he had 60 possessions against Donegal or something like that and was getting man the match for that, even though he wasn't particularly effective in his use of possession. He was just kind of backing over. But, like, I think Kilkenny will get it. I think he deserves it. I just, like, for me, Brian Fenton suffers for how good he is. He's just so consistent.
He's like Cluxton.
Cluxton's, that's what it is.
I can't for life me remember the last time he had an even average game, never mind a bad game. It's because he's that good that we just expect him to be that good all the time. Like, he'd have to be absolutely amazing, 10 out of 10 every single game to win Footballer of the Year. Yeah. He's just the best footballer in the country the last 3 years for me. He's not going to win it this time, but the fact that he's consistently appearing in the Footballer of the Year nominees every year, it would be, I'd say, more important to him that it's an acknowledgement of where he stands.
I'd say he'd like to win it now, but Kieran Kilkenny, in fairness, has served his time on these short lists.
The
only thing that can probably beat Kieran Kilkenny here is Andy Moran might be included late as a late nomination, and he might get it
easy.
Kieran Kilkenny's been in the mix for the last few years, and I absolutely agree with it this year, and I can't say who I think should be player of the year because the Woolley Awards are a really big prestigious show and I don't want to say it, but I would definitely have Kieran Kilkenny as slight favourite over McCaffrey, and I'd have McCaffrey and Fenton. It's hard to separate the two of them. McCaffrey man of the match in the two. Like, I mean, is it that impact? Jack McCaffrey, you just get up off your seat when he gets the ball. Like, I mean, I bloody love watching him play football. He's so exciting. Kilkenny's not so exciting, but he's also so important, and he's also so good in a different kind of way. I'd be more of a fan of McCaffrey than I would respect Kilkenny, whereas I love McCaffrey. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Does McCaffrey's story come into it as well, where he starts the season with like recovering from an ACL injury and he's
ended? Well, if it was the X Factor, this would all come into
the great VT to start it off. I do feel so sorry for Brian Finn. Sorry, he's one of the best players of all time, but yeah, it's just it's the Cluxtons. Like he's made the extraordinary ordinary, and nobody cares anymore that he's scoring 3 points a game and dominant.
What Fenton needs to do to get Player of the Year, because his form is enough to get Player of the Year. What he needs to do is burst onto a ball and score a top corner goal. And that, honestly, that's that little thing that people go, lad. Yeah. He never scores goals. He needs to, well, if he wants to listen to my advice. But like you see, this is Brian Fenton. Brian Fenton's motivation is not Player of the Year, so he won't do this. He's sticking into the team process, and this is why it's often so hard to pick a player of the year from Dublin, because it's such a team kind of ethic. And like McCaffrey absolutely was man of the match in two matches, but he didn't play for himself, he played absolutely for the team, that kind of way. It's just McCaffrey's lightning pace just makes you excited when you see him, and he's eye catching. But Fenton needs, he has added more points this year, so he's always adding to his game. But I'd say to him, just take the ball on the burst like a Bernard Brogan Sr., you know, in that 77 final. Just stick on an iconic goal and bang, that's enough for you then. Don't do it in Leinster, because I won't count it. So young player of the year here before we finish up, lads. This is really interesting as well, because until the All-Ireland final, I had David Clifford as a shoe-in. Now I don't know, because Brian Howard was outstanding in that, and Brian Howard's been outstanding all year. Now again, Paddy Power is Clifford at 2-5 and Howard at 7-4. I have this at 50-50. I cannot separate these two. Brian Howard has had an unbelievable year. If you look back at all his games, this is his debut year. Clifford had unbelievable Super 8s, which is what I'm counting it on. I'm not even counting Howard's Leinster Championship. Howard was outstanding against Donegal. You remember that game? Yeah. Like, I mean, he was man of the match that day, only Scully got the two goals. He was unbelievable. Up against Tyrone, then solid, to the point where Tyrone had to put Matty Donnelly on him in the final. This is a debut year. Yeah. Now, these are all. So I would have had Clifford as a clear favourite, but Howard's second half performance in the All-Ireland final, for me, I'm 50-50 on this. You'll have to tune into the Woolley Awards.
I would have hired ahead of Clifford. I thought he was close to being nominated for Footballer of the Year.
Yeah,
the way he was going.
Like, he was fourth in the betting.
Yeah, and like, you know, just it was Cluxton's best friend. Cluxton was just finding him for every kick out, like when he was going back in the fullback against Galway and against Tyrone and cleaning out everything in there. Sidestep for a man that size, I've never seen it before.
Like, Jeff Allen sidestep.
I thought he was absolutely brilliant, and I do think he's probably unlucky to miss out in Footballer of the Year. But
so on that basis, that he's fourth favourite for Footballer of the Year
on my
David no, but in the bookies, that's what the bookies were. He was the next in line after Howard, 16-1. David Clifford didn't feature in Player of the Year, so would that not automatically have Howard ahead of Clifford and the Young Player of the Year?
I wonder, is that because people are convinced that Clifford is going to win Young Player of the Year? I know it shouldn't make a difference, because I think, didn't Jack McCaffrey win the two of them in the 1 year before? I think he could have done, or was definitely, he could have been nominated for the two of them. But just to make the case for Clifford, I mean, he was coming in this year on the back of expectations that have never surrounded any player before, and he surpassed them. I think, like, he lived up to them, and then more, in a Kerry team that wasn't playing particularly well.
That's the big
and
thing.
And he provided
too.
Some unbelievable moments. That goal against Monaghan, that's going to be talked about
for
years.
Iconic.
You're talking about goals, Brian Fenton.
Do you know what I mean?
Fenton needs to get a goal. Yeah, well, Scully got goals, and Scully gets a lot of goals, and he's like probably not seen in the same kind of level as Howard, which is Howard's just a better all round player.
I think so. I don't know. I think it's really hard. I think Clifford will get it. I just think that he's, because of the hype about him, because he's lived up to, because of moments like that he provided against Monaghan. I mean, Brian Howard will be hard done by if he doesn't get it, but I think it is it's a vote, isn't it? So I think Howard's going to get it. Yeah. I'm not saying that that's necessarily going to influence, but
so you're right. So to make the case for Clifford, debut year, I'm discounting the Clare hammering and the Cork hammering. Comes on against Galway on a wet day in Croke Park and scores 1-4 from play. Mm-hmm. Fairly sure it was 1-4 from play, yeah. And then comes on against Monaghan, gets 1-3 from play and a winning goal. These are against Monaghan now and Galway, two hardened teams that Kerry lose one and draw the other on his goal, and then runs amok down at Killarney against Kildare team that wanted to do, you know, didn't want to disgrace themselves, a good Kildare team. That's a sensational Super 8s for your debut year. This is a leading traditional county. Now, Howard's not leading that forward line because no one leads it because of the team ethic. Do you know what I mean? So, for me, 50-50. I just can't decide. I just
can't wait for the Willie Awards.
per
Michael McKernan.
She's, and look, poor Michael McKernan, but like, I'm sure Michael McKernan, if he's listening, will understand her. If Michael McKernan makes a speech at the end and throws out the cliche, well, it was just great to be nominated.
you'd actually believe
Michael. Right, lads, we'll leave it there. Up next is Kerry's Tommy Walsh. Come here, I want you to talk us through the goal you scored in the county final after 15 seconds. I want you to tell me when you had goal on your mind.
Yeah, you've probably had a few 15 seconds experiences yourself.
Wake me up, show me what you got, because I don't want no one in it, man.
All right, delighted to say Tommy Walsh joins us on the line now. Tommy, how's it going?
Yeah, very good, Cullum. How are you?
Jeez, I have to say, Tommy, I'm great. I have to say it was great to see you back in the mix there, catching balls out of the sky, scoring goals. I'd forgotten you even existed. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, I know. It was a good win for us on the weekend. Obviously, Dr. Crokes are the standard setters, not only in Kerry, but over the country, really, over the last couple of years. So to get one over on them was huge. But look, they're not out of the Kerry County Championship yet, so... Well, it was a great win for us, just did a lot of work to do.
Yeah, that's the thing. So even from your celebration at the end, it showed how much it meant to the club and to yourself personally to get one over on them. You were 9 points down and to come out winners.
Yeah, because I think we've probably been underachieving over the last couple of years. We've a very good squad with a lot of inter-county guys as well. So we just haven't really put it together. And Crokes are obviously the best, have been the best team over the last couple of years. So... To have started so poorly and to get, you know, I think we were 10 points down at half time, and to put it together in the second half and come out on top was a big reward for the coaches and for the players as well. And you could see after, there was huge buzz around the club after. So it was brilliant, you know, and it was a nice win. But as I said, there's a long way to go yet. We're only in the quarterfinals. So it's all ahead of us, hopefully.
Yeah, your third favourites I was looking at to win the championship. So you're right in the mix. Like, I mean, what's changed now this year, or has anything changed, or are you just kind of clicking?
I think so. Yeah, like we've our inter-county guys is coming back. Like they play particularly well on the weekend. I think Barry Jantine had 6 points in play. David Moran was good around the middle.
Yeah.
Jack Savage played well in the second half. So, like, obviously, if you're going to win. County Championship, you need your inter-county guys coming back and playing well, and they have been doing that for us this year, so that obviously makes a big difference, and those guys then can drag along the club players that are there all year, and all those guys have been playing well too. But you know, when the pace picks up and the heat of championship towards the end of the year, you need those bigger players doing their stuff, and they did on the weekend.
Yeah. So are you enjoying playing again? Obviously, like I was saying, you're kind of the forgotten man of Gaelic football. We haven't heard much from you, and it was great to see you in such good form, scoring 2-2 and that catch at the end and the solo. That's the Tommy Walsh most of us remember. So, like, I mean, how's your form? Are you enjoying being back with the club?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. Look, I'm enjoying, you know, it's I suppose less pressure there, obviously, you know, so I'm enjoying just being around playing at that level, and it's probably been the first time since probably 2012 or 13 that I've been able to play, you know, a consistent couple of months and just play games. You know, I haven't had that since I picked up various injuries, some more serious than others, which have kind of just come at the wrong time for me. So to be able to play a full summer of football, you know, has been really, really enjoyable, and we've had a relatively successful year so far. You know, we've done well in the county league. We're going okay in the current championship now, so it is, you know, when you're winning, you know, that's where most of the fun is. So you know, I certainly enjoyed the win on Sunday, and hopefully there's a few more to come as the year progresses.
Yeah, exactly. So is that really what you needed, Tommy? Because, like, I mean, you played with the oval ball for 4 years and then you come back into the Kerry setup. And in 2015, you didn't really get much game time at all. And then in 2016, you started a league and it didn't start brilliantly for you. But then you just fell off the edge of a cliff and you never got that run of games. You know, that if they had invested in you to give you games and play your way back into form, that might have come.
Yeah, but that, like, I think at the, like, when I came back at the start, I was very anxious to get in with Kerry, and they were very anxious for me to come in. So, like, looking back on this, I suppose from my point of view, I probably might have done things a bit differently, but the management probably would have as well.
Yeah.
But I think, like, I just as you said, just didn't get the run after that. You know, when you know, I was probably putting a lot of pressure on myself. I was trying to do things at 100 miles an hour, and then things probably weren't coming off. Although there were stages where I felt I was playing well as well, and well enough to get a goal, but just wasn't. So, you know, as you were saying there, I just wasn't getting games together. And when you're only kind of getting, you know, 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, and you're just kind of relying on the stuff inside in training, then, which isn't really, you know, what you want. So it was frustrating, and you know, at the end, I suppose it was kind of made clear that I wasn't really in the plans. So I thought it was best, not only for myself but for the team as well, that I just kind of pull back and go back and just play football with my club. And I had a lot going on as well. I you know, I'd gone from playing a professional sport where I was, you know, obviously full time at that, into trying to work a day job. I'm living in Cork, so I was driving down, you know, over an hour to training. You know, it took my body a long time to get used to that again. So, like, there was a lot of different things that contributed. But, you know, looking back on it, you know, I might have done things a bit differently. But, you know, it was definitely the best decision at the time for me to walk away from it.
And see, I suppose the added pressure was that you were offered a contract extension in Australia, but you chose to come back to play with Kerry. So you obviously really want to prove yourself, you know. And then there's the Tadhg Kennelly thing where he came back. And in fairness, Tadhg Kennelly didn't start brilliantly that year either. He was a real slow burner before he came into it, you know. So, like, I mean, there's the pressure maybe of Tadhg Kennelly doing it, that you turn down the contract, you know, that you're back. Maybe this was just kind of, I don't know, kind of leaning on you a little bit.
Yeah, it probably was. And I was expecting, and I like maybe supporters are as well, but I was expecting to kind of take off from where I left off, you know. But, like, my body had changed a lot. I obviously suffered a significant injury. The game had changed. You know, there was a lot of things that, you know, it certainly wasn't the same landscape as the one I left in 2009. But, you know, I felt like, you know, particularly as we made the All-Ireland run in 2015, that I was playing well enough to you know, to have some contribution. But, you know, Eamon and the lads just went with other guys. But look, you know, that every county team has that. You know, I'm sure if you went through the, you know, the Dublin team or the Tyrone team, they'd have guys on the subs bench as well who would be saying the same thing. So, like, I'm not alone there. But,
no.
You know, the next year, when in 2016, at the end of the league, I didn't feature in the last couple of games, and at that point, I think it was just, you know, it was affecting me really. Like, it was affecting my relationships with my, you know, my girlfriend, with my family, at work. You know, it was kind of really leaning heavily on me. So I just felt it was the best thing for me, you know, for my own peace of mind, just to walk away from it. And I didn't want to be a distraction either. You know, when you're kind of down like that and you're around the county panel and fellas are, you know, young fellas are in good form, and next thing you're kind of coming in and you're, you know, not in great form, that can kind of be contagious. So, as I said, I felt that not only was it best for me, but it was best for the team as well, that I just pulled back from it.
I don't think anyone will even understand, because I've been in your position and I've dropped off panels, how much it can affect your whole mood of your whole, like, your whole week outside of it. It dominates your thought process. How can I get my form back? How can I get back in the plans? I need to get on this team. I'm not enjoying it. And this is swirling around in your head all week.
Yeah, and it was like, say, I was in similar positions over in Australia, but you're walking in and you're, you know, your friends inside there, your teammates. But when you're playing game football or hurling, like, you still have to go out and do your day job. You're still interacting with people all the time on the street. You know, and like, there wasn't a person that I met that wouldn't ask me, you know, what's going on? Why aren't you playing? You know, so you're trying to deal with it and give the, you know, the political answers all the time. So I just, like, it was you know, for my own peace of mind, I just felt it was time to go and move on, and whatever happened after that happened, you know, it was. But at that time, it was definitely the best thing for myself and the team.
Yeah, you mentioned 2015, the run to the final, because you came on against Kildare. I'm pretty sure it was the quarter final, and, like, I mean, it was a hammering against Kildare. But I remember watching that, saying, the balls you caught, the hammering is irrelevant, because they're fetches no matter, you know, what the score is. There's still kickouts that need to be won, and you were fetching some great ball, and I was thinking, geez, he's really put himself back into the mix. And then you didn't get a minute against Tyrone or a minute against Dublin in a final that a lot of people would say was crying out for you. Like, was that explained to you? I'm sure you went to Eamon and said, you know, how am I not even, because I think you were warming up a lot for the All-Ireland final.
Yeah, I definitely did go to it. but I think it rained quite heavily both days, and that probably didn't help me either. You know, they probably went for maybe smaller guys that were going to be getting on breaks and stuff like that. But, you know, I think around that time, that's actually when I felt I was playing my best football since I'd been home. I'd kind of cleared up all the injuries that I'd had earlier in that year. You know, so it was very disappointing to not to feature in either of them. And look, when after the semi-final, you just have to put it behind you and say, look, there's an All-Ireland final now in a couple of weeks, so I have to try and play well as I can and not let this affect me and, you know, make sure that I come on in that game or start or come on.
Yeah.
You know, but when it came to that game and things happen too, like, you know, during the game, you know, if a defender gets a black card, like, normally, you know, defenders will play the whole game, so if he gets a black card, that's a sub used, you know?
Up, so yeah.
Things like that can happen. So look, it just wasn't to be that they went with other players. And look, I've known Eamon a long time and the other guys, and I know that any decision he made was nothing personal against me. It was for what he felt was the best thing for the team at the time. So, you know, I don't hold it against him or anything like that. But it obviously was very disappointing for me personally those couple of years.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, we know the story now on most of the big counties is that the team is picked on training, and that has huge benefits in that everybody knows on the B team, for example, if I play well, I'm in the mix. But you're a big game player. Like, maybe you need a buzz. Like, I can't imagine you getting up for a training game, for example, who's used to winning All-Irelands. I know you have to reacclimatise, but I was never one when I was playing that would have shone in training matches. But you know what I mean? I would have needed more of a buzz to get involved in that. But maybe your mind has to refocus and pay more attention to these training games, or am I reading too much into that?
No, I agree with you. Like, if you have the players at your disposal, you can always just say, look, it happens in training, you know. Like, if you're Jim Gavin and you have like 30 or 40 guys that are you know, up to that standard, it's much easier to go along with that. But if you have a limited number of players and you have a couple of guys that you want to get the most out of, you know, you might need to do things a bit differently. And even if they're not going that well in training, you know, you might know that you'll get more of them on the day. But I, like, if you looked at that Kerry squad that we had that time, there was a lot of good players. You know, and if I had come on, there would have been another guy that would have been just as disappointed as I was not to come on. You know,
yeah.
There were some really, really good players back then. So, like, and I'm sure there was another four or five guys up in the stand with me that were just as disappointed. So, you know, I think it depends on the coach too. Some guys go with that attitude, but I think you have to, you probably need a balance. You know, you need to challenge guys and do different things, because players obviously react differently to different circumstances. So, I think if you have all the players at your disposal, I think that's a great philosophy. But I think in other circumstances, you can take different approaches also.
Yeah. Was there a part of you thinking, why the hell didn't I just sign that contract in Australia?
Well, I think I was with Sydney, but I probably would have had to move clubs if I was going to stay on. And that was probably another contributing factor to me coming home, you know, because there's only two teams in Sydney. So if I was going to move teams, I was going to have to move City again. So, you know, I felt that, I suppose, I'd given it 5 years, and I think the biggest thing for me when I was with Sydney and I picked up that injury was that I'd actually be able to play sport at some level again.
Yeah.
So even though I was only playing reserves at the end with Sydney, you know, I was still just relieved that I was back playing, you know, at a decent enough level, and that, you know, if I ever did come back playing Gaelic football, that I'd at the very least be able to play for my club.
Yeah. So how's that injury now anyways? Like, that's obviously the injury that ended Paul O'Connell's career, and the hamstring was ripped completely off the bone. I saw the video of it. Most people back home in Ireland would have seen the video of it, and it just looked excruciating. Like, I mean, is that all cleared up now? And, like, is it as horrific as I'm kind of imagining?
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Like, I was gone for a full year with it. And even after that year, like, I still had complications with it. Like, I pretty much missed the whole summer last year with the same hamstring, just because it's not, you know, it might only be 75-80% of the one on the right, you know, and I have to work on it all the time to keep it there. So it's a tough one. Like, and it's probably, as long as I'm playing a kind of a contact ball career, it's not sprinting and up and down, it's not trying to pick balls off your toes and things like that, you know, like, I will really have to work on it to make sure that it doesn't come back again. But look, it's fine. I'm getting through the games. I haven't missed any game this year with the club, so that's probably made the whole thing a bit more enjoyable for me. And I'm not, you know, because obviously when you are getting injuries, and particularly old ones like that, it can get very frustrating.
Right. Have you lost your speed because of it, or have you got that back?
Well, did I have any speed in the first place? I'm not really sure.
You had a bit off the mark.
I think that was just staying in front of fellas. I don't think it was like the string pace that was... It was just difficult to get around. But no, look, I still feel I can move pretty well. Maybe not as well as I was when I was in my early 20s, but you know, I still feel if I on a dry ball and a quick pitch, I can still get around.
Right, okay. And come here, how do they attach the hamstring back onto the bone? Because obviously it comes straight off it. Like, how is it glued back on, or how does it reattach onto the bone?
No, it was the way it was explained to me was like a fish hook or like a harpoon. So it would be basically just into your it would be kind of inserted back into your glutes or whatever that bone is around there, and then you're basically the tendons are attached that way back onto the bone,
right? So, and held in place
by the hook. Yeah, it's not nice.
I suppose, well, Paul O'Connell was so old, there was no way back for him. At least you were young and there was a way back for you.
Yeah, and I was lucky too that it happened over there, because, you know, I was in that professional environment and I was able to work every single day to get it,
yeah,
even to the level that it's at now. And if, you know, if that had even if happened at home and I was, say, having to work and sit at a desk every day, you know, that obviously would have hindered it. So I was, I do consider myself lucky that I was able to get back to, you know, a level where I was able to play sport at some decent level.
Yeah. So what's the story for the future for Kerry now? You're only 30, so, like, I mean, you're not in any way old. So, like, I mean, the new manager is up in the air. So if he comes in, obviously whoever it is will be watching the club championship. So if you're asked back in, what would you be saying at this stage? Are you kind of institutionalised as a club player and like the relaxed, the easygoing life?
Yeah. I, to be honest, I haven't even thought about it. It's the furthest thing from my mind. And, you know, there's, so let's go back. There's a lot of factors, you know, like I've just started a new job in Cork, so I'd need them to accommodate me. I'd have to make sure, you know, that my body was going to be up to this, because obviously it's a fair bit above club level. You know, and then if you had all those things, I'd need to be playing well enough, and then the new manager, whoever it's going to be, would want me back and see a role for me also. So, you know, it's not really something I've been thinking about. I'm enjoying playing for my club at the moment, and we're in a good position in the county championship, and I haven't won one yet at my club, so I'll be putting all my focus towards that over the next couple of months.
Yeah, no, that's understandable. But I suppose with Kieran Donaghy having retired during the week, there is that, you know, position there for a target man full forward in the old fashioned mould, like yourself and Kieran were.
Yeah, as I said, I haven't really thought about it, and I know Kieran, he could make a comeback next June if you like. Yeah. They get a bit bored.
The one thing everyone was saying about Kieran when he announced the retirement, obviously with a poem, just to be pure Kieran Donaghy, and like it was,
it was never going to be straightforward.
No, but it was the ultimate teammate. Is Darren O'Sullivan, Paul Geaney, Mark O'Shea, Eamon Fitzmaurice released a statement, and they were all, it was all the same thing. We talked about it at the start of the show. It's like the ultimate teammate, and like, I mean, you would have been a young fella come in playing alongside him. So, like, I mean, what were your memories of him?
Yeah, I think that's what he was. He was just an unbelievable teammate, and not only a teammate, but a really good friend too. Like, I Kieran's a bit older than me, but I was very good friends with his younger brother growing up, and still am. But you know, so I would have been around the house, and as I was growing up, and you know, and when I started kind of coming through and getting closer and closer to the Kerry senior setup, you know, he was always encouraging me, and even when I went inside, he was the exact same. And I'm sure he's been like that for a lot of young fellas. But you know yourself, he's a huge personality, and he's going to be huge loss to that dressing room over the next couple of years, you know, because there's obviously a lot of young guys in there, and you know, you're probably down another guy from the team of the 2000s, I suppose, where much of the leadership and experience probably came in that Kerry team over the last 5 or 6 years. So you know, there's going to have to be a number of other guys to step up to fill the void that he's going to leave.
Yeah, definitely. But it is an exciting time in general for Kerry football. Like, I mean, 5 minors in a row. Like, I'm sure while it didn't finish well for Eamon, I'm sure everybody's enthusiastic about it down there.
Yeah, I think so. Like, obviously, look, minors, just because you win a minor doesn't mean you're going to be successful. Like, I think when, you know, Kerry nearly went 20 years, I think, without winning a minor, and nobody really minded that time because the seniors were going well. But you just need one or two guys coming through, and like you see over the last couple of years, we've had, you know, David Clifford, obviously, Sean O'Shea, Brian Begley, Thomas Sullivan, all those guys are coming through. So if you can just get one or two guys each year just to freshen things up, and like Kerry are obviously in a very, very good position. It's just trying to get those guys up to that level now as quickly as possible. But I think over the next 10 years you're going to have a successful Kerry team, and just trying to stop Dublin, I suppose. But I think that Kerry are in the best position to do that.
Yeah, just because you win a minor doesn't mean you'll make it at senior. I won't take that as a personal slight on my career, Tommy. I know that. I think we'll leave it there while I'm running for cover here, I hope. Yeah. Tommy, thanks very much for taking the call. I appreciate it.
No problem, really. Cheers.
All right, great stuff from Tommy there. That's all we've time for. We'll be back on Monday as usual, and we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. And so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.